Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wants support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Abanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Abanelli spots out.
Welcome back to the Borough Breakdown Podcast, the season review show with Johnny Dana and Tom. We are the Borough Podcast that gives you the ins, the outs, the ups, the downs of Middlesbrough Football Club. And well, Borough wrapped up the championship campaign with a 3-0 defeat at home to relegated Wycombe Wanderers, seeing Borough finish 10th in the championship table. Dana, I want to kick things off with you. Neil Warnock said in his post-match press conference that he didn't want to get too downbeat about the result yesterday, but how much of a disappointing display was it?
Yeah, it was a disappointing display. And I mean, I was a little bit annoyed with what Neil Warnock said after the game, because for him to come out and say that he doesn't think the fans will be too bothered about that game is such a swing and a miss of a statement, because all I saw on social media, be it Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, even the forums as well, was criticism. And heavy criticism, and quite rightly so, because we were absolutely dire yesterday from start to finish. And then, you know, for him to come out and say that 10th is a fabulous finish because we didn't really have a striker. We did. You signed him.
And he never played him. Well, I'll come on to Tuber in a second, and also he let go of Britt and Fletcher as well. But Tom, Borough didn't actually register a shot on target yesterday against a side that has the second worst defence in the league, conceding 69 goals all season. Only Huddersfield have conceded more with 71, and they appreciate they did lose 7-0 to Norwich a few weeks back, obviously pushing that up. But did it really magnify Borough's weaknesses yesterday?
Yeah, it was awful, wasn't it? Like, it never looked like we had a plan going forwards. A plan B, because our plan seemed to be to just pump it forwards to Yannick and Watmore, and then wonder why they weren't able to do anything with it. But it didn't. It was like the definition of insanity. We just kept trying the same thing over and over again, and it just wasn't working. And you know, Wycombe defended against it well. You know, their centre halves like were cutting out crosses. Like every time I looked up from switching between the Derby game on my phone to the match, it was like, oh, we just had another cross cut out. Like that seemed to be our only option going forwards, and it just wasn't working.
Well, the crossing that you mentioned, the crossing, and we'll come on to that a little bit later on, because we've got a nice little trend around that from this season, and why maybe crossing probably isn't the best way to go for Borough this year. But then on his post-match press conference, and you mentioned it there, Warnock mentioned that Borough having a striker all season, and I'll throw some stats your way. 30 games for Duncan Watmore, scored 9 goals with 1 assist. Tuba had 5 goals and 2 assists from 38 games. Britt had just had 5 goals, no assists. And Fletcher had 2 goals and 1 assist from the 12 games. If you want to put Corburn in there as well, he scored 1 in 3 games. But the strikers are there. In comparison to what we want to say, Ivan Toney, who scored 31 goals. You've got Armstrong there, Blackburn, who scored 28 goals this season. Do you think Warnock's been a bit harsh saying that he didn't have a striker? He did sign one, of course. You know, he let the other two go. I appreciate it because they're out of contracts. But we did have strikers there, but a bit harsh, what were you saying?
Yeah, I must admit, I'm a bit sick of managers trying to pull wool over the fans' eyes and trying to take us as mugs, really. I mean, Neil Warnock has had the strikers. He's just not been able to get a tune out of them. And funnily enough, when I tweeted about Famara Jeju and everyone started dragging me on Twitter about it, everyone was saying, well, trust Neil Warnock. But over the last, I think, 12 or 13 years, he's had three strikers that have hit double figures. Callum Patterson, Kenneth Sahor, Luciano Becchio at Leeds. So he's not got a great track record with strikers. So for him to sort of try to put all the blame on them, I think is unfair. We don't play to a certain way that would get the best out of them. And it's difficult because they're not target men. They're men that you know, they're strikers that want to get the ball played in behind and they want the ball to feet and, you know, they want to play on the shoulder. And we're pinging balls forward into the channels. It's just not the style of play that I think is right for those types of players. And yeah, he can come out and say that he hasn't had a striker all he wants. He has. He signed one. So, you know, it was his first choice, apparently, our number one choice. It's, yeah, I'm a little bit tired of hearing those sound bites from managers, if I'm honest.
It's interesting as well because he did say that, oh, I'm no longer going to sign a player that I haven't seen in person. And obviously, yeah, I'm in that recruitment team for, you know, the signing of Chuba. Well, if Chuba wasn't the right fit, then why'd you bring him in? You know, you did have Britt and Fletcher there, of course, and yeah, they are out of contract, but you could always revisit it in the January if we needed to. We also brought in Duncan Watmore there. We didn't have to probably bring Chuba in if we didn't want to. We paid £2 million for him, and then to slag him off for not fitting your system when you've bought him, it's a bit confusing. And we'll come on to the striker's strengths, Tom. Dana alluded to it there, the stats there around 9 goals for Duncan Watmore, being Borough's top goal scorer this season. Did we play to the strengths at all?
No, not particularly. I think you have to look at the three strikers that we had and what we tried to do. Britt, I think, since Pulis, has got better at being kind of the hold-up striker, because he's kind of been forced to, but it's still not his strength. Like, his strength was the same as kind of Jordan Rhodes, his poacher in the box. Ashley Fletcher, again, improved since we bought him. Started kind of being a more physical presence up front, who had quite a bit of pace about him as well, and we didn't really use that. Chuba, obviously, we didn't use that. And then Watmore, even though he's our top scorer, he hasn't been playing striker for like a lot of the season. Like, fair enough, he has been in the probably in the last few matches, but there has been games where he's been playing winger and stuff, because we can all remember that goal of the month. I don't know if it was goal of the season, where he, you know, channeled his inner Messi and took everyone on and curled one into the far corner. You know, he's created chances for himself rather than the other three strikers, where they've had to rely on the midfield or wingers to create chances for them that never come, because, like we've said time and time again on here, they're just not tall enough to win the crosses that or long balls forward that are being put in, and then our players are like wondering why we're not creating anything. So no, I don't think we're playing to anyone's strengths at all at the moment. So I think it just kind of shows what we need to do in the summer. We need players. I mean, I know we were in for Kiefer Moore at the start of the year. I do think in this team he probably would have got into double digits for goals, purely based on his form this season and the type of play we've tried to play. It's just what we were trying to do didn't suit any of the strikers at the club.
Well, what would be the best way to play to these forwards then? Because it's all well and good saying that we're not playing the strengths, the long balls. And I agree, I've got to start with the long balls coming up next. But, well, I can tell you now, we're in the top five teams with the most long balls this season. We played over 1,000 crosses this year, and we don't really have much to show for it. With that in mind, with Borough playing the amount of long balls the way they do you think that's help or hindering the side? Then also, what do you think we should do to play at those strengths?
Probably hindering, because like Dennis said before, like we're trying to play long balls into the channels and there's never anyone there, or we're playing crosses into the box and then wondering why our strikers, who aren't prolific from the air, aren't winning these headers and putting them in. I'd be interested to see, like, I mean, it's a hypothetical, but Britt Fletcher and Akpom, I'd be interested to see how many goals they would have got in the team that went up, 5 years ago the other day. Because there were a lot of goals in that season where it was kind of like, you know, slid in through balls to the strikers on a plate, really. And even in the playoff season, so I'd be interested to kind of see hypothetically how many goals they'd have got in that system. But I think it's clear that in this system, it just wasn't ever going to work for them.
Yeah, I don't think it was going to work for them. And I think it comes down to a couple of things. You know, I appreciate we weren't playing to their strengths. And then also, were the players doing enough to get into those positions to try and get the end of the crosses? You know what I mean? I think we've said all on the whole season that Borough strikers don't gamble. They're not proactive in the box. It's very static. They're not willing to put the head where it hurts. And that can be quite frustrating as a fan, but also for Borough, we do need to try and give these players all the tools to succeed. And I don't think we did enough for that. But Dana, I just want to hear your opinion on it. Do you think the long balls really do hinder this side? Given that Warnock's main style is long ball football, defensive, yeah, counter attack.
It does, yeah. I mean, we haven't had the strikers for it. And yeah, I understand. Obviously, he went in for Kiefer Moore. He went in for Yaya Snogo. I think we've been linked with Robert Glatzel. All those players. And then we brought Akpom in, who I think in a better system, in a system that suits him more, we could get more out of him. But the way that we play, it just doesn't suit the players that we have. And I think, just from an outsider's perspective, if you've got those options, surely you should assess those options and try to play to the strengths of them rather than to just sort of keep your style of play and fit players around that. Because for Duncan Watmore to come in and to outscore all the players that were there several months before him, I mean, it's good for Watmore, but what does that say about the strikers, the rest of the team? It's not solely on them. But it's something that needs to be addressed, and we need to bring in the right options in the summer.
Yeah, well, we have to address it, and we'll come out a little bit later on. But in terms of the crossing side of things, we've got a good little stat we've pulled. So in crossing in the box, so in those games, statistically, Borough crossed the ball in the box more than they did when they actually won. So 11 of our 18 wins this year were when we crossed the ball 18 times or less. More than that, we lost. So 11 of our wins this season, so 11 or 18 wins this season, have all came from games where we haven't been crossing the ball at the box. So it comes back to that question: why are we still crossing the ball at the box when it's not really our strength? You know what I mean? So it's an interesting route that we're going down. But how would you assess Borough's forward play, Dana, in those games? Because we've kind of shown there, the wins have happened where we haven't really crossed it, but can they do more?
Yeah, we're just too predictable. I think when we get the ball out wide, sometimes the deliveries are good. It's a mixture of, like you said, and like we said on the podcast all season, the lack of movement, the lack of gambling, following up parried shots. I mean, when Chubrakpom did that against Barnsley, everyone was losing their minds because it just never happens, does it? You never see a Borough striker follow up on a parried shot and score from it. But I think also the type of crosses is quite important as well. Against Rotherham, we had a lot of luck from those low balls cut back, and I can only assume that we did that because we had a man advantage, because we weren't doing that before Matt Crooks got sent off, and we haven't done it since, really. So I think it's a type of crosses as well as a lack of gambling in the box. But we're just predictable. We're too predictable, which is why I think teams let us cross, because we don't have a Charlie Wyke and Aidan McGeady partnership, for example. Obviously, we've been linked with Wyke, who's scored a lot of head goals in League One this season. We don't have that type of player.
Mm. It's interesting you're saying that teams allow us to cross. So these crosses have all came from when Middlesbrough went behind in games. And Dana, before I move on to more of Middlesbrough's possession style and how that trend filters in Borough's defeats this season, Borough went behind, I think it was for the 26th time. If you have to fact check me there, is that right?
That is right, yeah.
26th time. So Borough went behind for the 26th time in the 46 games. Why do you think then, Dana, Borough had all of these slow starts and kept going behind in games?
it screams to me a lack of authority in the team, and you spot on there 26 times we've conceded the first goal. Out of those 26 games, we've lost 17 of them. And to delve a little bit deeper into Borough's slow start, only Bristol City have conceded more goals in the first 15 minutes than us. They've conceded 12, we've conceded 10 in the first quarter of a game. And I think it just shows a lack of leadership. I mean, we put a tweet out this week, last week or something, asking, what do you like about this Borough team? And a few people came back and commented, well, the togetherness, but I don't see it. I don't see it in the team. And I don't know whether it's because the standards are quite high from the iTalk Ranker days, where I think that's when we did have the togetherness, and you could never knock that. But I think we do have a lack of leaders. I don't think the team are quite a unit yet. I mean, we've still got a lot of gaps to be plugged. And if the team were together, they'd have a leader. They'd have the authority. And I don't think we'd be having these slow starts. So I think it's the lack of leaders that I personally think has contributed to Borough's slow starts this season.
Would you say motivation's one?
Potentially, but I mean, surely
is Warnock getting enough out the team?
I don't know. I mean, surely you would think that Neil Warnock would, but that's a massive. It's been a massive problem of Borough's this season. The starts that we've had. I think there's been multiple times this season where Warnock's come out in the press and said that we'll try to sort of almost blame the players, but surely he has to look at himself as well. If he's not getting a tune out the strikers, for example, if we still have this problem and this reoccurring trend of conceding the first goal, you know, you're right to ask the question, is it down to motivation? And that's why I think we don't have a so-called team yet. I just, you know, we're not a million miles away. I'm not saying the players hate each other or anything, but I just don't think that we have a unit.
I think there's a nucleus there, though.
I think the nucleus
is there. It's just building on top of that. And I think we do need 8 or 9 signings to probably put that right. But in terms of the slow starts, Tom, do you think is there anything more to it? You know, motivation? Is Warnock's tactics wrong? Is he too reactionary? Is he not getting that first half an hour right? And I appreciate football is a very unpredictable game. Anything can happen. But in terms of style, tactically, is he getting it right in those games, or was he getting it right this season?
I think we touched on it last week, and I think my opinion on it is still the same, that we're not raring to go as soon as we get out. I think tactically, you know, there's nothing kind of too wrong with how we're set up. You know, we've got the players in the right positions there to prevent people scoring in the first 15 minutes, but I think it just comes down to motivation and people not being kind of ready to go as soon as they step out onto the pitch.
Yeah, I think you are right, if they're not raring to go. But I want to mainly focus on the formation element, and appreciate formation. It does help, of course, but the way that Borough would switch from a 3 at the back, where they look very comfortable and they were able to dictate the play, they were able to find angles. So when we were playing that long ball, you know, we were able to create, when we were playing across the 3, the centre halves would be able to create an angle, play that diagonal ball. Diagonal ball. across, and we were able to, you know, create chances and get the second ball and become quite resilient going forward. And it was where Mills were quite positive at the start of the season. You know, that first 23 games, I think we picked up 36 points and we looked fairly solid. We're in touching distance of the playoffs, and you know, I think we conceded 15 goals at that time as well, and we looked really balanced. But then we switched to a 4, and then that's where the problems started to lie for Borough. And I feel like it's why the slump, the so-called slump in the second half of the season really started to come in. But another trend that I found from Borough this season, and we spoke about it previously, but it was when we lose games, and Middlesbrough have lost 13 out of 18 games is when they had more possession of the ball. Appreciate when we have lost games, when we had lesser possession, it was against the likes of Swansea, it was the likes of Brentford, it was against teams that we kind of knew we wouldn't have the majority of the ball. But it's quite clear, we went behind in 12 of those 13 defeats as well. So is it a clear tactic from the teams, Tom, that give Borough the ball and when the opposition are ahead, because they're not going to break us down?
Yeah, because we always revert back to the same strategy every time, of trying to get it out wide and cross it in. The amount of games this season, like I can't remember the exact amount, but it's like we'll go behind, then we'll start crossing in, and you know they'll all just crowd the box with their massive centre backs and cut it out, and they seem very comfortable in doing that. But it's something we revert back to every time, and it never really works. So I can't really blame the other teams for kind of figuring that out and exploiting it, because it's just like we've said before, it's too predictable what we're going to do.
Do you think we just lack that player who can take a game by scruff of the neck and create those chances? Like a Gaston Romero, which was a perfect example. Under the promotion season, yeah, we were up there. Teams would come to Riverside and sit. And to be fair, I'm not surprised a lot more teams did it now, but I don't think our quality is there yet for teams to do that. But with Gaston Ramirez, he was able to find a needle in a haystack, wasn't he? And able to create a chance out of nothing. But do you think Borough severely lack that?
Yeah.
Hence why the crossing out wide.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what we tried to address in January with the signings of Cabano and Bolasie. Not that I think they've not been great for us, because I think they have had flashes of brilliance. And, you know, we've said before, I'd love to see Bolasie back next season. Don't think there's any chance of getting Cabano back. If there is, hopefully you can get on Spencer's scooter and get up from London to join us. But
I can't believe that.
I kind of want to know what type of scooter is it. Is it one of those ones where it's like... Is it a mobile? Like, what type of...
In my mind, it's one of them, like, trick ones, you know, when people go up and down the R pipes and do flips and stuff.
Yeah, fair enough. Can you imagine that Jed Spence actually had a mobility scooter or something? He just taking a train every day because he couldn't be bothered to drive.
Didn't Traore used to have one?
He did, yeah. Did you remember?
Yeah, there's a photo of him, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah, see that? I mean, shout out to Jed for getting the scooter, but I mean... it's such a strange injury to have, isn't it? I feel like someone's telling a bit of a white lie in it. But then again, though, like, why even bring Jed Spence into that equation? You know what I mean? Like, you could have said, oh yeah, he had a hamstring strain, that was it, so he couldn't play. You don't have to say, oh yeah, well actually, he fell off a scooter. It was actually Jed Spence's, by the way, just to put a bit more fuel on Jed Spence's fire at the minute, fans. You know what I mean?
I want to see that CCTV footage.
Yeah, so do I. I feel like Middlesbrough should release it, shouldn't they?
Yeah, it's on you being for him next week.
Well, we need the cash to fund our...
How much do they give on you being framed again? Is it like 25?
250 quid.
Is it? Oh, 25.
Trying to fall off your chair, then, and see if we can get 250 quid.
Yeah.
But in terms of the crossing and stuff like that, Tom, I agree with you. We don't have the quality there. Teams are happy to sit in. Because they know fine well that we're not going to create a clear-cut chance. We're not playing to our strengths, and it's very Neil Warnock-esque to play the long ball and try and win the second ball. But when you get the ball in the mixer like that, you know, you expect something to drop, don't you? Hence why a lot of teams tend to cross and go more direct when they go behind. But the problem we've got there is since we're not gambling, we're not trying to pick up those second balls. It's just, and the crossing's relatively quite poor. It's getting headed out, reset. Borough launch the ball forward again. Comes back, and then we won't create a clear-cut chance, and I think that's where it's been really frustrating for Borough this year. But then we've got another trend before I move into that post-Christmas slump, and it was from Dave McNally who sent us it, and he said, what do the bottom seven teams have in common? We've lost against all of them. Who was the only team who did the double over? And it was Coventry City. So what does Warnock need to do to get consistency next year, Dana? Well, to be fair, it's quite clear why you didn't get the playoffs, because, I mean, you've lost against, you lost against those seven teams, but carry on.
Yeah, I mean, he needs to fill the squad out. He needs to get that leadership. Again, I think the lack of consistency can probably go down to a lack of authority in the team, because I genuinely don't think that if we had, and I always say this on the podcast, but because Grant Ledbetter was such an exemplary leader, he's really set a standard, hasn't he? And even despite the fact that I think his legs were going, and obviously he's since dropped down in division, albeit, yeah, he went to Sunderland, it was always going to happen with his boyhood club, but he just, you know, he never got too ahead of himself, and he never got too low either. And I think we need somebody like that. I do still think that we've got players that could sort of be born into that sort of role. I think Grant Hall, Sam Morsey, but I do think we just need someone that is maybe a little bit experienced, a little bit, well, I suppose those two players are experienced as well, but we need more experience, and I think we just need leadership.
Yeah, you don't have to be experienced to be a good leader, you know.
That's true. Ben Gibson was a fan example of that.
You're right.
Yeah.
but yeah, I think you don't need age to be fully experienced. I think if you're good enough, you can show the qualities which a good leader has, and that's you can have many leaders. And I said it on the last podcast, you could have someone who gives you 8 or 9 out of 10 every single week. That is someone who's a performing leader. You can have someone in the change room who gets the lads like up for it, like someone who's more vocal, and then you could have someone who is just like more of like a connector, where they have a really good emotional intelligence and they're able to get the best out of everyone by adapting their personality towards them. And I think that, do Bora have that? I don't know. I physically don't know. I think Neil Warnock has a specific style of getting the best out of the players. It'd be very interesting to see what he does in the next couple of days, where he's chatting to all the players individually. It'd be interesting to see how he approaches that, what players are going to have a future, what don't. But in terms of leadership, I don't know who is a leader. Maybe you've got like Grant Hall, you've probably got Housen, Morsey.
Is that it?
Dale Fry, maybe.
All right, sound.
What'd you...
Do you not remember when John Smogate got the armband?
Sound cheers, Gaffer.
Went over your head there, John,
didn't it? I know it did, but I'm thinking, like, if I know we're live on Red Army's Facebook page now, so if anyone can think of leaders apart from the three or four I've just mentioned, chuck them in the comments, because I'm struggling.
Well, I think it's because we've got some quite young players that are quite quiet, you know. Dyke Steele, for example, I think he's a very quiet
lad. Can have a
lad.
Calm influence.
Yeah, it's true, but I do think we need a shouter, a gobshite, a maniac, a psycho. I think we need someone that can just...
I'm going to say it. Lee Catmull type player.
Yeah. I agree. I think they're hard to find, I guess. I do agree. I don't think they necessarily need to be experienced, but we also do need experience, so kill two birds with one stone with that. But yeah, I think we need experience, we need leadership, and yeah. I don't know, you might see Paddy McNair step up next season.
Yeah, well, Luke's just commented on the feed and said Paddy McNair is a leader as well, so we could have that. He's actually the only Borough player that played all 46 games this year as well, so...
Mm. Not
some
every minute,
go on
though.
That, considering he was playing for Ireland every other week as well. Sorry, Northern Ireland, didn't it?
Yeah,
Northern Ireland. I was going to say, one position I think we could have a... We don't have a leader currently in, but I'd like to see us have a leader there next season, is goalkeeper. We've spoken about it before, in terms of like an experienced keeper organising the defence. I don't think Bettinelli did that. And I thought Archer was starting to do it, but we've seen some unfortunate defending mishaps in the last couple of the last few games, really. So maybe we need someone a little bit stronger in terms of a personality in goal as well. But you know, at that point, you're looking for someone like a Demi or Schwartz or Shea Given, just someone experienced who can tell everyone where they need to be and kind of organise that defence a lot better than it has been organised this season.
Yeah, I mean, using your voice, the best power you can have on a football pitch, but. It was interesting you saying like the last few games, Tom, and it leads quite nicely to the post Christmas slump and the signings in the January window. So, in the 2021 season, Borough in the top half of the table for 38 consecutive weeks from game week 8 to 46 with an average league position of 9th. However, there was a slight change in results from the first 23 games to last. So, the first 23 games, Borough won 10, drawn 6, lost 6. Scored 28 goals and conceded 21 with 36 points made. And then from 24 to 46, Borough had won 8, drawn 4, lost 12, scored 27, so one worse off. But then look at this, 32 goals conceded and 26 points gained. Borough was 7th after the win against Wickham in the January. And we did bring in the signings of Cabano, Balassi, Mendes, Lang at that time before this so-called slump happened, Dana. Did you expect Borough to kick on and get into the playoffs? I mean, given those signs were quite exciting, it seemed to be a very, very good window for Borough.
Yeah, I did, and I still can't put my hand on, put my finger on why Borough have slumped. I think there's a multitude of potential reasons. I know that a couple of players got COVID. I think in maybe December, January, that could have taken a lot out of them. I think maybe a lack of a proper pre-season, potentially, or a proper break going into pre-season could have been a factor as well, but also injuries, because there's a stat. Our most important players statistically are Dykstil, Tav and Fry, in terms of points per match. And
yeah, it's about 1.59, isn't it? I think you can throw Morsey in the mixer as well. I think he's on 1.56, I think.
Yeah, Dykstil and Tav 1.59 and Fry 1.56. So, you know, important players there that have been missing. And I think Dale Fly. Not this again. Fry's influence on the defence has been really important this season, and he's been missed. Tav's been missed. Dykstil has been missed as well. He's really come into his own under Neil Warnock. So that's had an impact as well. And I think maybe Neil Warnock has had too many options, Dawn.
Too many. There it is. There it is. Borough breakdown bingo. Get your pens out.
It was always going to happen, wasn't it? But yeah, I think he has had maybe too many, and it's diverted him away from like that 3-5-2 to accommodate like Sabalasti and Cabano. And them two have been good. I've been really impressed with them two. Unfortunately for Mendes Lang, we haven't really seen much of him, have we?
Yeah, he's got a lovely chip and then...
Disappeared
in a thin air. But yeah, in terms of the signings, Cabano, Bolasie, Tom, how would you like to keep any of them for next year?
Yeah, well, ideally, you'd want to keep both of them. But like I say, I don't think there's any chance we're keeping Cabano, especially if Fulham go down. Bolasie, free transfer, you could potentially make that work.
Oh, Yannick, come on. Yeah, are you listening? I know you're listening, Yannick.
Yeah, please do.
Please do.
Yeah, you'd want to keep both of them ideally, but only Yannick's probably the more realistic of the two. You'd maybe even want to keep Mendes Lang. You know, if he can get a full season out of him playing, you know, back to his best, if he can have a proper pre-season, he could be pretty important for us. But yeah, they're looking at them on paper, you'd ideally want to keep all of them, but there's some who are more realistic than others there.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on. There's going to be links to it, and we'll come on to it a little bit later on with the questions. But Boris form never picked up, even with those signings coming in. We all thought at that end of that transfer window, I was like, ooh, you never know, playoffs potentially, even though we've only been it twice for the whole season. Everyone was saying to me, oh, Johnny, you're going to get a tattoo, aren't you? Because we're going to be in the playoff places, we're going to get promoted. And I was like, yeah, well, actually, I feel a little bit worried now, because the signings, you thought, hey, you know what, Borough have done something very, very good here. But appreciate that it wasn't a huge drop-off, and I appreciate that a lot of fans are saying it was a massive drop-off. We slumped, we kind of like stuttered over the line. That the attitude hasn't been right since Christmas. And to be fair, the results... We appreciate we are 10 points worse off than we were at the start of the season. But why do you think that is, Dan? Do you think it was injuries? Do you think Borough got found out? Do you think that Warren was not getting the most out of the players? Why do you think we kind of stuttered over the line in the end?
I think, like I said, I think it's a mix. I'll also throw in, I say the injuries to Tav, Fry and Dykstil, but... you've got to try and get the best out of the alternatives as well, and I don't think that's quite been achieved. So, I don't know. I'd love to know what people think is the main reason. I think, for me, the main reason... I think it is the injuries, to be fair. But then, like I said, you could easily say that Warnock hasn't got the best out of the alternatives and the alternative group. But yeah, it's unfortunate, because I think January, you look at that window and you think, right, we look good, and we were going into it thinking, right, we're going to kick on now, and we never did. And I think there's a multitude of factors to it, definitely.
Yeah, there absolutely is. And to be fair, I think it wasn't a significant drop. I just think that Borough pretty much leveled out to what we expect them to be. I think Neil Warnock did a great job this year to get us to mid-table from where we were in the previous season. I think that he's brought the best out of a fair few players, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for bringing the best out of Baller, Dykstil, McNair.
What's going on with us? Are we drunk?
Well, to be fair, I did have a big night last night, so it was...
he went for a swift one.
A swift one, turned to a swift five and swift six, and then the next thing I know, I'm playing beer pong, and I've came home with shortbread.
True story.
Yeah, true story. So it's... I kind of lost my point now. I've lost my point. But all I was going to say is that he's bringing the best out of certain players. And the reason why he's bringing the best out is he's able to motivate him to some extent. I think he deserves a lot of credit for what he's done to get us to mid-table. And mid-table is pretty much where we should have been anyway this season. I think it's just because that we're like 38 weeks consecutively in the top 10. I think it's always going to like go, oh, what if we could, we're only like 3 points off here, we're only like, you know, we just need to beat so-and-so. And when you look at the season, probably like the last 5 or 6 games, like maybe 7 or 8 games, we were actually parallel. We're pretty much on track from hitting the exact same numbers than we were at the start of the season to towards the end of the season. And it's like those last 7 or 8 games where we're playing like the better teams or the teams in and around us, it's where we massively dropped off. And then not just significantly dropped off, like we just didn't show up. And that kind of, it pretty much proved that we weren't good enough. And I think that's why we had that slump towards the end of the season. It's why fans get frustrated. But I think the players were just like, oh, well, these are better than us. Like, we're not gonna get playoffs this season. And then when your manager's saying we're not gonna get playoffs this season and being very vocal about it, it's gonna have a domino effect. But in terms of the influential players, and I've already mentioned them there, like Tav, Dykstil, Fry, Morsey as well, with that average 1.59 per game. It is pretty much a nucleus, isn't it, Dana? That's for Borough to kick on next season, and you can build a team around them.
Yeah, and I think it's a decent nucleus as well. I mean, I like Morsey, I like Hall as well. I think he's been a good signing. We just need to build on it. I'm interested to know where Warnock will put Paddy McNair next season, because
up for sale.
Well, I was thinking earlier on in the campaign, he's better in defence, but I do think he's better in defence in a back three, but in a back four, I think he needs to be put in midfield. And I do think his second half of the season has gone under the radar a little bit. I think he's been poor the second half of the season. I've got a full list here of mistakes that have been made in the games. And a lot of them, McNair has had a part to play in it, getting caught wrong side at Sheffield Wednesday, Bristol City McNair stepping out, leaving Fry exposed. I know that it's incredibly harsh because he has had a good season overall, but the question has to be called of next season, where does he play? If we play with a four-man defence, I think he needs to be played midfield for me. But if it's a three, I would play him in that three.
Yeah, I think he's better in a three as well. I think that when you do play a three, you can rotate your centre-halves to play out, really. I think when you've got the likes of Fry and you've got the likes of McNair, you've got two good ball-playing centre-halves there, and you can really allow them going to midfield. Appreciate Fry doesn't probably have the pace that McNair does, but you know, they're both technically very, very good.
And Grant Hall is as well.
So they can create chances through the midfield and play through teams like we did at the start of the season. And I thought it was more beneficial. But there's a couple of comments there from when we were on about the slump, and then people were saying that Leon said a goalkeeper with arms would have helped us a lot this season. Luke saying that we sold our best goalkeeper in Ainsley Pears, which I'm not going to lie, Luke, I disagree. And Leon against, they said about Pears there as well. But basically people were saying that we're just not good enough, and the goalkeepers were to blame, really, for the slump. And I mean, you can't really blame them with some of the clangers that we've dropped in the goalkeeping stats of Bettinelli and Archer. They haven't really been too impressive. But going forward, Tom, our goal contributions this year, George Savile was our top player with 10 and with 6 goals and 4 assists. Watmore had 9 goals and 1 assist. Paddy had 9 with 2 goals and 7 assists. Neymar had 8 with 3 and 5. And then Tav and Tuba both had 7, 3 and 4 and 5 and 2. I feel like we should chat about George Savile a little bit, because he's someone that's gone under the radar. He's someone that hasn't really been getting all the headlines at all. Do you think he's had a very good season this year under Neil Warnock?
I'd say average, to be fair, but I think you could say that for quite a few players in the team. Obviously, you say there he's went under the radar and he has had the most goal contributions, but looking at that list, it's not really hard to get to the top.
True.
I mean, when we signed him, you know, and we're going from Millwall, I was questioning then kind of what kind of player that
George
we'd Savile signed.
7 million.
Yeah. I was wondering what he was going to bring to the centre midfield. Because, you know, we've been, I want to say, spoiled in centre midfield in recent years, but that's like discounting Pulis era, Woodgate era, etc. Looking back at like when we've had like Leadbitter and Clayton, they've maybe set a high standard for centre midfield, even Forshaw and Duran when we had them. So it was wondering what kind of player would actually sign with him. I'm still kind of wondering now. Like, he just seems like, I don't want to say average midfielder, but nothing really stands out about him for me in centre midfield.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being 6 or 7 out of 10 every week, is there?
Well, yeah, but when you're in a midfield where it's kind of a very similar style of player across the three, you do need someone who's gonna stand out. And yeah, it's just kind of seeing what exactly the three of them bring to the team.
Yeah.
Not to say they bring nothing or anything, but you need someone to stand out and be able to link up the midfield to the strikers, which I think other than Tav, not many of them actually do.
Yeah, so you're saying that Borough needs some diversity in the midfield next year? Yeah, well, that's absolutely, yeah. I think when you look at the likes of Saville, I think he's a very tidy player. I think he does bring a lot to the table in terms of connecting the midfield to the defence. But it's just that little bit more quality, I feel, that you need. And but to be fair, I've been happy with George Saville this year. I think he was one of my players to watch this year. I think I did say
a surprise package. Yeah,
yeah, I'm going to defend him here, Tom. I'm going to say that George Saville is the best thing since sliced bread. I think he had a good season. But I absolutely see your point in terms of we do need that. Additional quality, we just need that number 10. You've got Tav there, and I think Tav is probably a better wide player than probably what more of a central player. And I think that if we have that number 10 maybe next year, maybe put Saville in that number 10 role. You did play there for Millwall, and that's where you got the best out of him. We haven't played him in the number 10 since. so maybe that's probably a role that we should potentially look at. But let's move on to questions. We've got a fair few to go through. We'll start off with Marcus, and he's at the Borough Pessimist. And he says, who would you be sad to lose from the team that played on Saturday? For me, it was none of them. So, Dana, any players that you'd be sad to miss?
I'd say Hall, McNair, Balassi. I'm forgetting the team now. Watmore. Probably them.
I mean, to be fair, Dan, I'm not going to lie to you, it was a game that you could easily forget in the heartbeat, isn't it? So I won't blame you on that one. But next question is from Ben in Strickland. He says, is there any point in having this coaching staff for one more season if we are to finish mid-table? Tom, do you want to take it? Is there any point?
Well, definitely not if we're going to finish mid-table, but that's obviously not what the aim is for next year. You know, Warnock's a manager who's got, 12 promotions under his belt, mm-hmm. and he's looking to mount a challenge for next season. I think a lot of people are kind of disappointed with this season because we've always come close to the playoff places and then dropped off and then come close and then dropped off again. But we were all saying at the end of last season, you know, top half or mid-table would be a massive improvement on last year, and we'd all take it. And it's exactly what we've got. We said it a few podcasts ago, what would be like an on-par performance for this season. I think this is it. And, you know, he's done a good job to get us here. And then it's just time to push on next season. Obviously, if we finish mid-table next season, is a bit of a failure. But
it's interesting.
I think if he's been given assurances that he can sign the players he wants for next year and build the team he wants, you know, there's no reason why we can't be challenging. So I'd say absolutely keep him next season.
Do you think it's an actual failure if we do finish mid-table next year?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, he's making noises now saying he wants to mount a promotion challenge next season. He's saying he wants to sign 8 or 9 players. If we do go ahead and sign 8 or 9 players for next season, then we've got the expectation there. If we do sign them, that okay, this is Warnock's team now. He's got exactly what he needs to take us to the promotion challenge, at very least playoffs. If we finish mid-table next season, then yeah, I'd say that is a failure.
It's interesting. Do you think he's doing a bit of a gibbo there and saying he wants to smash the league? Is he starting to like plant the seeds there? Is he trying to get expectations a little bit high? I appreciate from a marketing perspective, you don't want to go and say, well, we're aiming for mid-table this year, guys, so buckle up.
Yeah, so, I was a bit cynical thinking it might just be a season ticket drive, like, but...
Well, is this squad good enough? I think right now, no. And
with the teams that are coming down as well that could potentially be challenging, I think it's going to be tough next season in the Championship.
I mean, I know we have our season preview show, obviously, in a few weeks' time anyway, probably a couple months' time. But like right now, I'm like when the teams are coming down, and if they keep managers, if Jokanović goes to Sheffield United as well, and see the teams are not going to go up as well. Oh, God, it's like, I appreciate it might be a failure if we don't get playoffs, but realistically, is playoffs even, like, going to happen?
I think with the current squad, no, but like I say, if he gets the players he wants and, you know, he's got no excuses for next season, he's built the team he wants to build for this promotion challenge, then I'd say that is a failure.
Well, Junior Hoilett's on a free, Tom, and we've seen about it in the car, and I could not believe, by the way, he's only 30.
I know.
He's been around since 2003.
Well, I mean, he did get stuck in that hole, so I think his age just stopped, didn't it, for a bit.
In that hole, what?
Yeah, remember when he slid at QPR and he got stuck in that camera pit?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's so... You need to get some of those shortbreads down you, Johnny.
I think so, yeah. I think I do. I'm looking at him now and I'm thinking, I fancy this podcast fancy by Safeway shortbreads. stolen from the shop. I don't know, man. I don't think Hoilett would be a decent sign, to be honest. I mean, you might prove me wrong, but for me, I think it's...
we haven't been linked with him yet.
I mean, it's
keyword,
I am back to you, Jeff, in the studio. Well, to be fair, I wouldn't be surprised when Sam Klukas on a free as well, and he was linked with Borough last year, so he could be a signing that that Borough bring in, and it leads quite nicely on the next question from Patrick, and he says, do you think Warnock will be backed to get the 10 players he needs to improve on the 10th position this year? Do you think he will be backed? Do you think he will get those 8 to 10 players that he wants?
I think he'll be backed. Whether or not he'll get them is a different debate. He probably won't. I mean, we saw how much of a struggle it was last season, where I think it was just crickets, really, wasn't there, for a while until... Who was it that we... Was it Bettinelli that we... I can't remember who we signed first.
Hall, I think.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
We signed Grant Hall after like a few days, didn't we? And then it just went...
Yeah, then it went dead and there was tumbleweed. So I think it is going to be a struggle. There are some somewhat decent free transfers. I think James Collins of Luton would be a decent signing. Just to throw one out there. But yeah, I think he'll be backed. Whether or not he will get them is a different conversation.
Yeah, well, hey, you can't knock the recruitment team. You know, you can't knock him. Warnock's at the wheel now. He said he knows them all. He knows exactly what he's going to do. He's going to identify all of the players that we need.
He wanted to sign Yaya Sanogo.
Hey, Warnock knows best. So I can't really. I'm joking. I don't know. It's interesting because if he does bring in the 10 players that he wants, gives them deals. Like Tom said, if we get 10th position into so-called failure, then we're stuck with Neil Warnock players and we have to move to the next project. And it leads quite nicely to the next question from Charlie. He says, do you think a director of football will be introduced after Warnock leaves? Do you think the fans will help or hinder us next season? So do you think after Warnock maybe does leave next year, do you think he's going to move upstairs where Gibson is and have that like that connect between the manager and the...
I don't know, maybe. I mean, we've talked about it for a few years. We talked about that when Pulis was manager, didn't we? And that didn't happen as well, probably thankfully. But I can't see it happening. Not Warnock anyway. I think after this job, I think he's done. I know he's been saying that for years, but I think after this one, if he can get us promoted and go out on a high, I think he probably would stay at managers in the Premier League. But if he doesn't, I reckon he'd be done.
Warnock moving up, Blackwell taking over.
That's what I'm thinking. I think that might happen.
Yeah, so it could happen. Yeah, I think.
Well, our track record, we Stewie down and he was next manager.
Yeah, probably. Well, you know what? You're not probably far off, to be honest, because we're probably due a manager with no experience again. So we'll see how that goes. But do you think in terms of the fans, Tom, do you think they'll help or hinder us next season? Do you think Warnock was a bit lucky that fans weren't there for like the last few games?
Probably the last few games, yeah. I think start of the season, it probably would have been quite a positive atmosphere, especially after how he ended last season. I think he had pretty much everyone behind him, and everyone was horny for warning. Mm-hmm. But last few games, I saw quite a few tweets yesterday which were saying the players should be thankful that no fans are in the stadium against Wickham, because they would have got some abuse for that.
Jeez. Verbal or physical?
End of season pitch invasion for the wrong reasons. I think the atmosphere yesterday, I don't think it would have been as bad, but remember when we went to Barnsley right before COVID hit, and that
was rough.
You know, that guy was having a heated discussion with Justed as he was walking off the pitch and stuff like that. Like,
Oakwell's always a bad place to go when you're not playing well.
Yeah, I remember it happening with Mowbray as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Mowbray was sad. That was just a sad time that fans were getting frustrated. But with Woodgate there, we were very, very poor that day, wasn't it? And the only highlight of the day was probably singing Sweet Caroline, and then also starting Janine Neo's Magic in that concourse place.
The sports centre place.
Yeah, we started that and it was just going off 25 minutes. And that was probably the highlight of our day. Apart from that, I can't remember a thing. I can only remember Ravel Morrison just spraying a ball for 30 yards, and then that was about it. Good times.
And the highlight of my day was the Tyson Fury fight afterwards.
Oh, yeah. God, man, that's a massive throwback, yeah. I mean, sorry, Dana, we're just we're going on a massive tangent. You're sat there I was, good shout there. I mean, that's what a massive giveaway for our next guest. But we'll move on to the next question. And it's from Phil, and he says, if you're a free agent or a player with options down on the table, what is it about Borough that... What was in the question? What is it about Borough that will persuade you to come? I don't think we're an attractive option, and even less so with Warnock in charge. So if you're a player with options down, would you like to come to Borough? Do you think Middlesbrough are an attractive outfit?
Not really. No, because, I mean, we do have a bit of a disadvantage because players seem to hate coming up north and the smoke and satanic hills. But I don't know. For certain players, I think Warnock will be a pull, but I think it'll mainly be players that have played under him before, which is why I wouldn't be surprised to see Kadeem Harris, Junior Hoylett sign, other players as well. You know, Nathaniel Mendes-Lang's been brought in. funnily enough, I heard yesterday that Barry Bannon played under Warnock at Palace and didn't give him a chance. I think we can rule that one out. I know he's a free agent, but I do think Warnock is a pull for certain players. But again, like I said last season on the preview podcast, we don't have a long-term plan. So is that an off-putting factor for players? I'm not so sure. It might be.
Another question we've got is if you could only sign one player this summer, which would it be? A target man, a midfield general, a strong centre half, or a dependable goalkeeper? Tom, what would you prefer?
I mean, you'd probably have to pick a target man because we've got no one else there, apparently.
The striker doesn't. Hey, you don't need a striker. Look at Man City. They don't play with a striker.
I mean, we'll go with Sam Morsy up front.
Hold the ball up.
Morsy and Watmore as a front two. I think ideally you need all of those, but if you had to pick one at the moment based on our style of play, it'd probably have to be a target man.
I'd go goalkeeper. Honestly, I think we're desperate. We're absolutely desperate for a goalkeeper. I mean, I don't think Enzi Perez was right, and I think maybe this season would have been a good chance for Enzi Perez to come in. He just needed time away, but I mean, he's went now, and at the time when he came in under Woodgate, I didn't think he was good enough to nail down that position for a prolonged period of time. I don't think Sol Brin's ready at all. I'd be very, very, no disrespect to Sol, but I can't see him in a Borough shirt. I can't see him as being Borough's number one goalkeeper. And it's not his fault at all.
We don't say that with a lot of our youth keepers, though.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I was coming to. By Jason Steele, who wasn't really particularly great, I can't really think of a goalkeeper that's actually stood out from who, you know, came through the academy.
I think they all have parallels with how they come through, because they come through and show they're quite a decent shot stopper. You have Jones, Turnbull, Pears, Steele. get people behind them thinking this guy's reflexes are classic and, you know, he's a decent shot stopper, but they don't communicate with the defence. They're not a commanding presence in the box. And long term, that wears off and, you know, they have to be replaced with someone more experienced in the long run.
That's what I mean. Like, they have to get replaced, and that's why I mean with like Solbrin. Like, he probably needs time away, and then when he comes back, who's Borough's keeper going to be? And as he nailed it down, and that's where it becomes really difficult for these type of players and they're coming through. I think goalkeeper is probably the hardest position to come through at. And but yeah, I hope he proves me wrong. But you know, at this moment, I don't think I can see him in a Borough shirt. So that's why I'm picking goalkeeper. But one final question before I move into our Borough breakdown awards, and it's from Paulie Mackey. Says, why is Warnock reluctant to give the kids a chance when we had nothing to play for? And is this the sign he will go for more senior pros next season, like Karanka used to? Dana, you know, I mean, there was that little rumour from on Talk Sport that Borough would get a bonus if Mills were finished top 10. So,
what he would?
Warnock, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was a bit of a shame to see the under-23s lose and the under-18s lose, because we pulled players out of those squads to give them 2 minutes, which was a bit of a shame. And Jack Robinson and Hayden Hackney came on, obviously, towards the end. Mally, did Coburn come on?
Yeah, he got a little bit longer.
I think by that point I was watching Sheffield Derby, to be honest. But I do think he'll go with senior pros, but much depends on the transfer window, because if he doesn't bring in enough players and we do have a lack of depth, then he's probably going to have to integrate the young players. But I think there might be a certain reluctance to play these young players because they might not be ready. They might need a loan spell. And you know what Borough fans can be like with young players, where we build them up to bring them right back down to earth. So I don't know. I mean, I would like to see more players play next season. I'd like to serve Mally, Coburn go out on loan, but you know, Mally, Hackney maybe stay in the under-23s and get a couple of games. But I don't know. I mean, he's played a few this season. I feel like he will go for senior pros because he needs the experience.
Yeah, I think you will as well. So let's move on. Let's talk about our overall season opinions, and then we'll go on to the Borough Breakdown Awards, which is my favourite part of the show. So start of the season predictions. We pretty much we all had our different, and I appreciate you're going to have to be Elliot for this. So sorry for
some drink.
get a bottle of red wine on. But start of season predictions. Do you think Borough achieved what you set out for them, Dylan?
Well, I said mid-table, but I also said, and this is to quote myself, I want to look back at the end of the season and know that we've taken significant steps forward as a team.
And have we?
I don't think we have.
Why?
I think we've taken more of a diagonal rather than a step forward. Even maybe even a slight sidestep, maybe. That's why I say diagonal, because I don't think we haven't moved or progressed at all. I think there's been certain players that have really come into their own this season. The nucleus of the team, like you said, is good and can be built on, but we still can't score goals. Yes, we have conceded a lot less than last season, but that's not to say that the defence has covered themselves in glory this season, because they've conceded some incredibly sloppy goals. We still don't have a lot of leaders in the team. And the goalkeeping situation hasn't been sorted, so that's why I say I don't think we've taken significant steps forward. We haven't gone backwards, but I don't think that we've progressed as much as I wanted us to, or I hoped we would.
Okay, yeah, no, I agree with you on that one. I agree with you. I think we haven't made significant steps, but I do think we've made positive steps in the right direction. I think this year was always going to be some sort of transitional period. I don't think
we're always in a transitional period.
No, I mean, transitional period since 2007.
I thought you were going to say 2003.
Well, we were thriving in 2003, Dana. Thriving.
Well, no, I wasn't born.
Oh, yeah, you weren't born.
Jeremy
yeah.
pinging free kicks into the top corner.
Oh, yeah, mate, those were the days. Remember going to, like, you know, Ellen Roads, where we, Janino scoring up to Screamer, and then that Jeremy chip as well, wasn't it? And then, you know, Carling Cup, European Tour. God, those were the days, Tommy. Those were the days.
Take me back,
the good old Essen. But, Tom, your season predictions, do you think Borough achieved what you set out for them to achieve?
Yeah, probably. I agree with what Dana just said. I was thinking about it there. I think we've taken positive steps forward in some areas, but some areas we probably went backwards. And that's not from signing the wrong players necessarily. It's down to a multitude of reasons. I think, striker, we've went backwards because of obviously the attitude of the players that have left, probably. Not wanting to play from like January onwards. Goalkeeper, and I said we went backwards, but then we've had positive steps forward in other areas, like Baller, Dyke, Steele, Fry,
midfield have had more goals.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Tav's played well when he's been in. So I don't think we're probably 8 or 9 players off next season, like Warnock said. But that's mainly kind of depth, having those options to kind of rotate, and if we do get injuries like we've had second half of this season, to actually have some decent options to bring in. Also, I didn't say Dawn there.
I was thinking that.
Yeah, I didn't think of it. Too slow. But I'd say we've moved forward in some areas this season, just backwards in others. So it needs to be kind of a full push forward on for next season.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to say that we've went back in certain parts. I think I agree with you. There's certain positions which have probably regressed rather than progressed. And I think my prediction at the start of the year was mid-table. I would be very, very surprised if we got anywhere near the playoffs. And that's why I put the tattoo betters, because I just didn't have a chance in hell that we were going to get promoted. And I think I also said that I want Middlesbrough to be the hardest working team and the hardest working team in the league. They're a great set of lads, these lads. sorry, man, the Tony Pulis came out. And just, I just want us to be a really hard working side, horrible to play against. And to be fair, we did that at time at the start of the season. I thought, we're picking up points here. We're going to probably finish about mid-table. And we looked relatively safe. And I didn't want us to worry about getting relegated at all this year. And I was hoping that was just a blip, and I think it is. I think Warnock has done a reasonable job in terms of turning us around slightly, made us more difficult to beat. I think there's been some good moments this year. I think that it's been relatively okay. And throughout, I always thought mid-table would be perfect for us. I just think that the way we're positioning everything now is that we were so close to hitting that playoff spot.
Yeah.
It's why fans get frustrated. It's because they've had that little glimmer of hope, and it's just been banished in the way that we've approached last few games. I think that's why people are getting a bit of bad taste in the mouth. But if you look across the whole season, I think it's been relatively positive. I think we've improved. But next year is where we have to, like you were saying earlier, Tom, I think we do have to kick on now. I think if he's serious about wanting to get promotion and whether it's actually achievable, then we have to really kick on. We have to have a fantastic summer to be in and around the playoffs next year, because if we have an average summer or anything less than that, we'll be mid-table, and that's where my prediction will probably be. But in terms of Neil Warnock, he is happy for one more year. You're still horny for Warney, the pair is. Oh, anyone? No, so I guess I'll take that as a no.
I'm happy with Warner for another year.
You're just happy for Warner,
Yeah, yeah, I'm mediocre for Warner, 5 out of 10 for Warner. But yeah, I think, like I said earlier, he's got the record number of promotions under his belt. If he's seriously aiming for promotion next year, I reckon we'll get close to it. Providing he gets everyone who wants in the summer, there's obviously no excuses. It's going to be his team next year.
Well, it's his team this year, really, isn't it? A lot of it. But yeah.
Yeah, I suppose during last summer, he didn't get every player that he wanted. There were still some excuses there, I think, that we missed out on some top targets. And, finances did hold us back a bit. So I reckon if he is back during the summer, brings in these 8 or 9 players, we've got the depth options done.
There it is.
I'm happy for him to stay another year and challenge for it.
Yeah, a couple of comments before I come to your opinion, Dana. Peter said that if he would come, why don't we go for Frank Lampard if Warnie doesn't stay? So I can't see Frank Lampard coming.
Didn't I call Jason Tindall the Frank Lampard of the Championship because he's out of his depth?
You know what I think?
Mind you, that was in the context of being a Chelsea manager.
I personally think that the Frank Lampard was... I think you disrespected Frank Lampard there.
No, it was in the Premier League that I said he was out of his depth because I think he was. I don't think he was ready for that Chelsea job whatsoever.
I think he deserves a lot of respect for what he did, you know. I do. I thought he did a cracking job. A cracking job at Chelsea. But yeah, in terms of Warnock, are you happy one more year? Are you all right for Warnie? Are you not happy for Warnie? Are you, I don't know. I can't think of any more words.
I wouldn't say, I don't think happy is the right word because personally I don't really enjoy the style of play that his teams have. But it is what it is, isn't it? I kind of have to put up with it because he's the manager for next season, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you don't sound overly pleased.
Well, you know, I'm just like you. Like I said, I want to see possession-based teams, and I said in the car every time I see a long ball punted forward, I die a little bit inside because I think Tony Pulis has scarred me. So,
yeah, but if you think about that though, like if you think of the managers we've had as of late, Pulis, Warnock, and obviously probably Woodgate as well, where we played a lot of counter-attacking style, but it wasn't really a long ball. But Middlesbrough have played a defensive style of football for many, many years. There's only really that three-year period under Cranker where we haven't really... Oh, and maybe Mowbray a little bit.
We were defensive under Cranker though, weren't we?
I mean, I think we got
defensive a lot, but it was solid at the back and possession play.
I can't see being defensive when you hold like 60-70% of the ball. Do you know what I mean? I can't see that. I feel like you're controlling and you're just being patient with it. I don't think that's defensive. I just think that with that at that time, which is the opposite to what this Borussia team is, where we'll get the ball and we'll hit it hopefully in the channels and we'll try and get the ball, we'll probably reset and then we'll go again and we'll try and break with pace. I think with Karangi, we just get the ball, wait, just play it around. That's why I really like Adam Forshaw at the time, is because he was just able to connect the dots at times. And I think that with him, it was just wait until the opening is. Teams aren't going to be so solid for 90 minutes, hence why it kind of works at times. And I appreciate it didn't work at Birmingham because really, you never had the players fully behind him, to be honest. Really, when you've got like Harley Dean there, and who's openly slagged her off for like three or four seasons, and then you become the manager, and he's probably slagged him off.
Did Karanka get rid of the Djukovic?
No,
he's still there.
He's still there.
No, I mean when Djukovic was at Borough, was it Karanka that got rid of him? Because I don't know what the timeline.
I think so.
Was it?
That's what I'm trying to think. Because
he signed for about $1 million, didn't he? Under Mowbray. He was only there for like a season or two. But at that time, though. Lucas Jukic was only, 21, 22? He was very, very young, wasn't he? Very young centre forward.
I seem to remember we had like Curtis Mayne still in the team when Karanka took over.
The glory days.
So I feel like Jukic might have still been there. I feel like Kai Kamara was there as well.
Curtis Mayne.
Carriol was there.
Yeah, Carriol, Lucas Jukic.
I feel like Karanka did get rid of Jukic. Yeah. Emres was there.
Project Emnes. Yeah, he was there.
Jesus.
Yeah, and then we got red.
Had that lethal partnership with Emnes and Ledesma for some games under Karanka.
The good old
Danny Graham.
Yeah, Danny Graham. The good old glory days, eh? The good old glory days. But in terms of one more year of Warnock, I'm happy with it. Got a good record. I'm probably not horny for Warnie anymore. I'm kind of like mediocre for Warnie. I'm happy. But I think he has to start the season very well, though. I think if he starts the season poor, and the way the bad taste is now with fans, I think it's going to be a very, very difficult job for him. And then we'll have like a Pulis type, not Pulis type revolt, where people get in the bed sheets saying Pulis out. But I mean, I think he has to start the season very, very well. If he doesn't, it could be a bit of a
1-0 loss to Saltash United incoming.
Yeah, well, there we go. But let's do the Borough Breakdown Awards, my favourite part of the show. So go, guys, who is your player of the season?
For me, I'm going to say Dale Fry. Purely because I know what some of the other categories are, and it was between two players for this one. But end of last season, we were saying... you know, Dale Fry, is this a season for him to kick on? And I said it could be the same as like what Karanka had with Ayala and Gibson, just need the right manager to get the best out of him. And I think he has kicked on. I think Warnock has got the best out of Dale Fry. I think it's a massive improvement on last year. And yeah, for me, he's definitely up there.
Okay, Dale Fly for you then.
You're the one that said that first.
I said it many podcasts ago, and it's kept. I'm just going.
Dale Fly.
But
how was that caught two of us out now?
Dana, who are you going for?
Tav, I think. Tav for me, I think he's been key to us. And similarly with Fry, when he's not been in the team, we've missed him. Mm. So there's no one else like Tav in our team, I don't think. So for me, I think he's our player, my player of the year.
Interesting. I'm stuck between three. Yeah, I'm stuck with Dykesdale, McNair and Sam Morsey. I feel like the way Dykesdale's been this year, I just think that he's, and the way how poor we are when he's not in the team, I feel like you can't go past him. I think, don't get me wrong, I think Paddy McNair's had a fantastic season. He's played every minute. He's been influential for a lot of things. But I just think when he's not played, we've really missed him. So I'm going to go with Anthony Dykesdale as my player of the season.
Well, do you want to see what we said at the beginning of the season? You said Tav.
I think I said about Dykesdale that he had to really perform this year, didn't I?
I can't remember, but you said Tav for player of the year. I said Ashley Fletcher. Elliot said Britt. So those two went incredibly well.
Oh, well, I'll take Tav any day of the week. Mm. Then we'll go for... Should we go for... What have you got in your... Did we say surprise player of the season? Should we go for surprise player of the season?
For the review? Or yeah, do you want me to say...
Let's do your preview. Let's do what we said.
Right. So
sorry, Tom. You're going to be Elliot for a second here.
Elliot said Sam Stubbs.
I can't believe I said that.
You said Saville / Marcus Brown, and then I said Marcus Brown.
You know
so
what?
You've covered yourself in glory. Me and Elliot have not.
You know what? I think Marcus Brown would have been excellent this year. If he didn't have the injuries, he looked really sharp and good.
Yeah, mightily unlucky, wasn't he?
He was, yeah, I only played like 5-6 games this year, didn't he? Mm. He got injured again. So I hope he has a really good season next year if he's able to break through again. And then Georgie Saville is my star. And, yeah, good old Georgie boy. Good old Georgie boy. Most goal contributions. There you go. But yeah, who was your surprise player of the season then, Tom?
For me, I'd say Bowler. Okay. I wasn't expecting him to push on as well as he has done this season. I remember seeing some pretty bad games from him last season and thinking, who have we signed here? Because he's rubbish. But
why have we signed him? He's rubbish.
But no, this year he's completely turned it around. He's probably one of my favourite players to kind of see on the team sheet. Especially after a couple of years under Pulis, where we were playing centre backs at full back, it's nice
centre backs
like,
in centre mid, centre backs
and out
up
and
front.
Out full back now. And I think he's done really well this season, and plus he's got a hell of a shot on him as well.
He does.
The Roberto Carlos of the team.
The Roberto Carlos and Mark Bowler. Dan, have you got a surprise player?
I would agree with Tommy. I think Mark Bowler's really stepped up, but there's other players that have as well. I think Fry, I've criticised him before, but he's been one of our best performers this season. Dykesdale as well. There's a few, to be fair. But actually, I'm going to change it. I'm going to go Watmore.
Okay.
Because I did not expect Watmore to hit the ground running like he has, and I think he's got the most, I think he's the most statistically the most clinical in terms of his shots and goal conversion. So, yeah, I would go Duncan Watmore.
What more
could you want?
What more could you want? We've got Mark Ball. I'm going to go with Paddy McNair as my surprise of the season. I didn't expect him to be so good at centre half, and the way that he's been able to create chances from there. And I think it's a shame that we reverted back to a four, because I feel like it hindered him quite a bit. But when we were playing that three and he was able to creep into the midfield and create chances for us, I just thought he was absolutely brilliant. And playing every single minute of the season pretty much this year, and I think he's been fantastic. So he's been my surprise player. I just didn't expect him to be so good at centre half. He's a jack of all trades, is Paddy McNair. And then we'll go for signing of the season. So who do you think Borough's best signing has been this year?
for me, this was Watmore, and he was the other player alongside Dale Fry for me for player of the season. Like Dana, I didn't expect too much of him when he did sign. I thought he'd be a good option to have out wide. I just didn't think he was going to have the impact that he did. But yeah, like I said earlier, when he was channeling his Nnamesi against Huddersfield, that goal was immense, and I think he's played great this season. So yeah, for me, definitely time of the season.
Okay, Sanderson, yeah. Dylan?
Yeah, I would give that to Watmore as well. I think he's been fantastic and always gives 100%. You know, he's one of those runners. I think he was nicknamed the Road Runner at Sunderland, and you can see why. So I would say Duncan Watmore for that one as well.
Hat trick for Big Dunk. I'm going for Watmore as well. I think he's to get him on a free. And the way he's played this year and the amount of effort he puts in each game, yeah, absolutely signing the season. But I do want to give a notable mention to Sam Morsey. Fantastic. I'm all aboard the Sam Morsey train, by the way. I'm on board. I'm the driver. He's taking us up, I'm telling you. but not like, and talk about captains and stuff for next year. Like, why not Sam Morsey? Why not? Like, he is the shithouse of midfielders, and I feel like, I don't know, we just look so much better with him in the team.
Yeah, he's a shithouse, but he's also a very good player as well. He's got that aggression, but he's also a really good midfielder. Yeah.
So if anyone wants to join me on the Sam Morsey train, you're happy to join. Like, I'm the driver.
All aboard.
All aboard the Sam Morsey train, yeah. And then probably I kind of want to give a shout out to Bolasie a little bit because statistically, he was our most effective player in the second half of the season. So, shout out to Bolasie, and I'll buy your Korean chips if you ever come back to Teesside. Or unless you want to dinner, since you're best pals.
We both will.
Yeah, I mean, and then even Morsey, even like your tweet the other day, didn't he? Morsey saying that he was the best centre defensive mid in the world.
Well, it's just the truth, really, isn't it? Better than Kante.
Yeah, I mean, who's Kante? You know what I mean? When you've got Sam Morsey, all the Morsey train.
Morsey Express.
The Morsey Express, yeah. what is your favourite moment of the season? We'll do a favourite podcast one, but what has been your favourite moment of the season for Borough this year?
For me, and I'm going to sound like an idiot here because I can't remember the exact score, but when we played Millwall at home, I can't remember if that was 3-0 or 4-1.
3-0.
3-0, right, because for me that was just a great day. It was, I went round my uncle's to watch it. We watched the match, had a few cans. A
few tinnies.
Had a swift one.
I went for a swift one.
And then it was the Anthony Joshua fight afterwards. We had Chinese curry and chips, so
what a night, yeah, what a night.
So yeah, that was it for me. It's just probably the standout day of the season.
Going for a swift one then having a Chinese, love it. I mean, the swift one has to start. We're gonna have to make it a thing now, the swift one. It's becoming a thing. What's our favorite moment?
Have you got one about favorite or best game this season coming up?
Well, yeah, that was going to be my next question, yeah.
Oh, because I don't want to sort of put the two together. Oh, I didn't think about this one. I'm such an idiot. I'm probably going to have to go with something that's recent because I've got a memory like a sieve, so I'll probably say Josh Coburn's goal against Sheffield Wednesday.
Great moment.
Yeah, at that point, it was probably the most I've celebrated a goal in months because Borough's season sort of just having completely petered out, and I think my thoughts towards the season got a little bit apathetic a bit. So I'd say, yeah, Josh Coburn's goal against Sheffield Wednesday, that was a good moment for him, and it was great to see the celebrations as well with him.
Okay, I'm going to go with Marcus Brown's header against Bournemouth.
But
the only time in the season we've had fans in there, I think it was just a pretty sure 1-0 down, and for him to score a header, but then also, you know, he's on the comeback trail, and I was like, here we go. And Marcus Brown's gonna be a passenger on the Morsey Express, and we're gonna go for it. And but yeah, I think that was my moment of the season. I think I thought it was a cracking moment for him. But then we'll go on to the best game of the season. So who's to go first? Tom, do you want to?
Yeah, I mean, this was going to be the Millwall game as well. So I'll go for a slightly different one and say 4-1 win over Birmingham at St Andrews.
Casual wingy banger.
Yeah, no, it was a great game. I had a tweet go viral shortly afterwards.
You did,
so.
Yeah, you did. See,
yeah, stand up.
Was that the wrestling one?
Yeah,
yeah.
Good tweet.
Love the wrestling meme. Does Tom?
Right, you do, don't you? But yeah, great performance. I think I'm gonna probably echo that. But Dana.
Oh, that's an easy choice, that one. I'm going to go for Bristol City away, because at that point, that was at that point the best, well, I still think that's the best display of the season, because I love those games where we have to really dig in deep, and we really exploited Bristol City at the back. And I think that was a game where I remember we did a live stream afterwards. I was buzzing, and I haven't really been buzzing about Borough.
I was buzzing.
The buzzing moments don't come around very often because I'm a miserable git. But no, I think the Bristol City game. But I think Nottingham Forest away as well. And that was good to see Yuri Ribeiro get absolutely rattled by Britt. But yeah, Birmingham as well. Millwall was a good half of a half. It wasn't a good game as a whole. Well, it wasn't the best game as a whole, but I think 30 minutes of the first half was probably the best football I've seen. But yeah, I'd probably go the Bristol City game at Ashton Gate.
I feel like the Wickham away was... imagine Wickham almost my performance of the season because the season ended.
Because you didn't watch it, you were watching Derby.
Yeah. but I think performance of the season, the 4-1 to beat Karanka the way we did was quite nice. Even though, as much as I love Karanka, I think that it was good to get one over him. And again, that Bristol City one was a great performance. Wickham was a good one. I'm going to go probably Birmingham. Yeah, I'll go Birmingham performance of the season. I think the performance was excellent. And then after that, we shipped Lewis Wing out on loan. shout out to Lewis Wing.
it's so random.
I know. And then
shout out to Lewis Wing.
Honestly, if he relegated Derby yesterday, that would be amazing.
I'm so sad that never happened.
I know. Marlon Pack has just crossed off. I don't like him anymore.
I was thinking yesterday, like, if he had done that and Rotherham stayed up, he's at least added another million or so onto his price tag if they wanted him.
Mm. Well, absolutely. I mean, so that's 1 million he's going for then. I'm joking.
Bit harsh.
I'm joking. But there'll be people that agree with me. I'm waiting for the comments because we're a little bit behind on the stream, so we won't be going on that. But finally, my favourite question of the moment: what is your favourite Borough breakdown moment of this season? Dana, do you want to go first for this one?
Yeah, I think hitting 100 episodes was a big milestone for us, especially when you consider how it started in your bedroom with a blue snowball microphone.
Yeah.
You know, we've come on leaps and bounds since then. I think it's been great to be a part of it. So hitting 100 episodes was probably my highlight this season. That was this season, wasn't it?
It was this season.
It feels
season,
like last season and this it season was fused together. But yeah, I think that's mine.
Yeah, and then Tom, you
probably completed my January transfer to the podcast, to be honest. Remember getting the call, it was in Tesco's at the time. Yeah. You said, you fancy joining? I was like, I'll put me shopping down, I'll be right there. And you said, well, not for another couple of weeks, so I'll put me shopping back up. But yeah, it's probably got to be that for me.
Yeah, I think my highlight is probably Elliot leaving. Joking, Elliot. I'm joking. I know you're listening.
It's Jimmy Lee's highlight.
No, I love you really, Elliot. But favourite moment, yeah, I think 100 episodes is great. You joining Tom was great. I think the sad moment was Elliot leaving as well. And I also think the way we've been going for, what, 2 seasons now fully, like 2 full seasons now, is just great. And the way we've grown in such a short space of time, especially when the football's been absolutely dire as well. We've started at the back end of Pulis, had Woodgate, and now Warnock. And people are still tuning in. I think it's commendable. And I think that being pretty much my most. But I think 100 episodes was very, very sweet indeed. And we're getting more guests on now. And I think that's pretty cool, even though we've kind of grown it for, like, us three. And then we just want to supplement a couple of guests here and there. And I think that's been quite nice. So yeah, chatting to Dino was pretty cool as well. So we'll put those in. And then that's pretty much it, guys. So thank you very much for joining me. And thank you for joining me for the whole season as well. And if you listen to us on the podcast apps, thank you very much for joining us throughout the season. We've really enjoyed you guys engaging with us. But then also, if all goes to plan next week, we have one more podcast with a guest coming out. And then we're going to take a very short break while we're, you know, it's going to put our feet up and relax. We've got a couple of projects that are going to come out over the summer as well. So hopefully you'll be tuning into them as well. But that's pretty much it, guys. Thank you very much for tuning in with us. But if you want to leave us a review on the podcast apps, and you know, give us a tweet or a message or anything like that, please do. We'd love to engage you guys. But for now, this has been the Borough Breakdown podcast, and that was all your matchday chatter in a pod. See you next season.
Want support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the track. Goal!
Abanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Abanelli spots out. Emerson!
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.